Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
From the Liquor Barn Studios, it's time for the V Show, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Bobby V.
There you go. That's not bad.
But I'm saying that's when you're talking about tens and twenties, these guys are doing it with hundreds of
thousands.
That's
right.
How you make a living. But I don't think I've got the stomach to do that.
No, I'm not sure I do either. But I think...
Hey, are we on? Are we on? This whole time we've been on? God, it's a good thing.
No, we got the end of that conversation, though.
Good thing I didn't say shit or anything.
Hey,
there
we go.
Wait, what? What do you do? What?
And.
What?
I got it. I think I got it.
Oh, what?
Why do you do that?
At least
just try to keep us on our toes.
At least it wasn't. I didn't know she wasn't 18.
Hey,
oh. Hey.
What'd you say?
The line is, she told me she was 18, and besides, I wasn't there. I was robbing the liquor store at the time. That's the line. quality bit of canned comedy.
I believe... The VP.
For every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. I'm sorry, you weren't
going
to break it.
I was just going to let you keep going. That was pretty good.
Oh, that's a fabulous song.
I believe the VP had some action on game. Game five last night.
I won the story.
The reason I'm bringing this up is that exact bet that you said, the in-game bet of the over/under on goals at 8.5. Diener took it, and he took the under. So he won.
The reason why I brought it up is because I'm saying, I realize now, the guys who make a living betting sports, first of all, you got to have a strong constitution. And secondly, you've got to be really strong in your convictions. And for me, I don't do enough research, but I do believe in that expression I use all the time doing basketball games, in the anatomy of the game. Games take a certain shape, and the fans... emotional reaction to it takes a shape, which often doesn't jibe with what really plays out. And what happens is, at the point where they had a flurry of goals, it wound up being 4-2. They scored a power play goal, Edmonton. Florida came right back and answered in 14 seconds. And everybody thinks, oh my God, it's going to be a slugfest from here on in. And you guys have been around hockey a long time. You know that's not the way it plays out. The guys get together on a bench and, hey, let's settle down. Especially in the playoffs. Not necessarily in the regular season.
Yeah.
But in the playoffs, let's settle down here. So, at that point, when I got it, and probably when Drew got it, he probably saw the same thing I did. I saw it on ESPN Bets. It was plus for under eight. It wasn't like both of them were minus 110.
Yeah.
Under 8.5 wound up being plus like 130.
Yeah.
Or 140. The over 8.5 was minus 110. So obviously the people were like, I said, well, I beg to differ. And so I took the under and wound up making a tidy little profit, made up for my loss on the baseball strikeout thing.
Right.
But that's what you got to do. You got to, and I'm telling you, it was nerve-wracking because there's so many ways you could lose that bet. It's 4-2. The over-under is 8.5. Florida scores the next goal, so it's 4-3.
Right.
Well, now there's a whole bunch of scenarios where you lose. If Florida scores the next goal, no matter
what,
you have to lose because the game's got to go to overtime. They won't end 4-4, so somebody's going to win at least 5-4, so that's a loss. If Edmonton scores an empty, when they pulled the goalie, which teams will do in the playoffs like very aggressively, if Edmonton scores quickly in the empty net, Florida might still pull the goalie. They might keep their goalie out because they pulled Bobrovsky with like 2.5, 3 minutes or something to go.
Yeah.
And so if Edmonton scores quickly, well, you got nothing to lose. You might keep him out and hope maybe we can get two quick ones.
Right.
And they almost, did you see the two plays?
Oh, it was
they
wild.
Had an empty net goal.
Hit the post.
Hit the post. They had Kachuk, I guess it was.
Yeah, Kachuk dove.
Flying back and saved it. He hit it, and they wound up scoring anyway. McDavid scored, but he saved it from going in amazingly. But at that point, you know, there was only 17 seconds left. So Florida, you kind of put up the white flag and say, okay. And at that point, I'm like, let's not do something stupid here.
Yeah, right.
You know, they dropped the puck 17 seconds, and Daddy got a profit.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Hooray.
Well, Diener, I think, took the under, just like you did.
Okay. Right.
I don't know what odds he was getting at. I could probably do the math.
No, he's probably listening. He's going to send it to us.
I know what the payout was.
I took the over.
I think he got it like at plus 250 or something like that. Like,
whoa, you're kidding.
He might have used the booster or something. Yeah, so there might have been no way you'd have gotten that much.
I used the over before the game at 8, and the alternate over at 8.5 at plus 500, and I was like,
so
ooh.
You and I at the end of the game are rooting. We could have been punching each other in the face.
Yeah, I was. But I did it before, so I didn't even know. I didn't even check the lines after the second, but that game was awesome.
Well, after the Flurry, yeah, I think it went to 8.5 because
Theo Flurry was there?
Nice.
Marc-Andre?
Oh, look at you guys with your hockey knowledge. I wish I could think of another Flurry.
Mick?
Oreo McFlurry.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. but no, the Diener also had, he had a bet on, I think, McDavid to get another point.
Oh, he had more than
in
one
the
point.
Game. Well, I mean, after the 4-2 flurry.
Oh,
I don't know if it was.
Oh, did that empty net.
So thankfully,
Kachuk
saving that goal, and you know he sweeps it away and basically knocks it right to McDavid, who then buries it.
It would have been somebody else's goal.
Yeah.
Oh, so, man. True. Yeah. You had some fun. That's why sports betting is fun.
Oh, it's best.
Because you have some excitement.
No, he did say he was going to buy me hockey tickets if his bet hit. So
hockey tickets. What kind of hockey tickets?
Well, we were talking about.
I got you Cincinnati Cyclone tickets. Sorry, Nikki. it's on a random Tuesday too. Sorry.
We were talking about maybe you know doing some Blue Jackets or Predators games next season. So yeah, I might have to hold the VP to that. But
very interesting match already starting today. The U.S. has started their Super Eight round of
it
the
is not going well.
T20 cricket. They gave up 194 points. 194 runs, and they only got 4 wickets, so it's a lot of runs. But they remember that first match they won against Canada in overtime. I think it wasn't it 190 or Pakistan. No, Pakistan was 150 something.
Really? Yeah. Was that low?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh wow!
But the Canadian match was extremely high scoring. It was 197 and 194 they won.
Wow!
And they scored 197 to USA, and they still had 14 balls to go. They did it with 14 pitches to go.
How many overs is that?
17.4
overs?
Mm-hmm. So they can bat. We'll see. That's a lot of runs, though. The match against Pakistan that they won was not as high scoring, but it was 159 tied. And
okay.
They had the super over. But that's going to be a lot of runs against a good bowling team. South Africa's really good. So we'll see. I was trying to put an analogy in so people like, what do the points mean? If you use one, what the hell is he doing? What is that all about?
What just happened? I just heard a thought.
Jacob Markstrom has got traded to the Devils.
Who did?
Jacob Markstrom just got traded to the Devils, so Tanner's excited.
Is he any good?
I don't know much about him, but
he assumes he's one of those Scandinavian-type players?
Yeah.
He just likes Scandinavian plays. Good Lord, he's fired up.
I wanted a goalie. I just really wanted
a goalie?
Oh, yeah.
Who's he a goaler for?
He was the goalie for the Flames.
Oh, and they had a great year. Oh, wait a minute. No, they did not.
So they did not have a good team, though.
So a lot of
him.
Goals went behind him.
Yeah. But he is one of the best commercials ever when he was on the Panthers. Actually, kind of weird that he was on the Panthers now. But it was him. And he has like a figurine of Martin Brodeur and then Carey Price. And he goes, Marty, you're the better goalie. No, Carey, you're the better goalie. And then he turns and he goes, no, Jacob, you're the better goalie. You're the better goalie. You're
really?
The better goalie.
That's pretty good to get an athlete to act like that.
That's pretty funny.
Goalies are weird, though, so they're always down.
Yeah. Goalies are like drummers.
So Martin Brodeur's not the goalie anymore for the Devils?
Yeah, no. Sadly. That Scorpion save in 2012. He sold his soul for that.
He sold his soul for that save.
All right, well, good news. Congratulations to you as a fan. So the hockey's got some drama now. If you want to put in it, let's go back to the cricket, though, for a minute, and we'll go back to hockey. The fans who say, this is interesting, but I don't even know what the hell's going on. I came up with this. Is no way did I do any research, just off the top of my head. If you use 100 runs in cricket,
okay,
equaling 85 points in an NBA basketball game.
Okay.
And then go for every 2 runs above or below that, 1 point in an NBA game. That's a pretty good analogy.
Okay.
So
okay,
if you had 100 points, 100 runs in cricket, it would be equal to 85. If you had 200 runs in cricket, you would add 50 to the 85, because 1 for every 2 runs you score, 1 point you'd add to the NBA.
Okay.
So you'd have, that's the equivalent of about 135 points for an NBA game.
Okay.
Because you had 50 to 85.
Right.
So that's about, so today, with the match going on today, the South Africa scored 194. So you start with 94 is, a half of 94 is 47, right?
Right.
And add 47 to the
85.
And you get, what is it, 132.
So kind of a high-scoring
game. High-scoring game. So
yeah,
the U.S. is going to have to, you can beat it.
Yeah.
But you're going to have one of those games where, you know, somebody's making a bunch of threes. So that's what you're looking at. That's the challenge you're looking at. That's a rough analogy. If I went through the scores of the cricket, that's about what I come up with.
So 100 runs equals 85.
85 points in a
basketball. 85 points. And then so every one after that.
Every two.
Every two after that equals one
point.
1 point.
So as an example, here's results. Just pick one. This is Pakistan and Ireland, the match there. Now, keep in mind that when you bat second, you don't have to, you know, you're just trying to beat their total.
Yeah, right. You don't play to your.
But Pakistan scored 111. Ireland scored 106. So 111 would be 11 divided by 2, 6, round up. 6 plus 85. They would have won like 91-89. That's about right.
So low scoring game.
Yeah, that was probably low scoring game. Yeah, real low scoring. Now, Sri Lanka beat the Netherlands. They scored 201.
Whoa.
So they would have added 51 to the 85. They'd have 136, and the Netherlands
would have been a high scoring game.
Yeah, well, not for them. They would have, to give you an idea of a route, Netherlands scored 118, which would be 94.
Oh, God.
So they would have won
136 to 94. 94. Yeah.
But that's roughly good. They'll give you a feel for.
I like that. That's
what be happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. On this show, I don't do it for this reason, but you know, there's one guy in particular. I shouldn't keep bringing it up, but I just like to use it as a springboard to what I'm going to talk about. Name dropping on the show.
Name drop.
Through my brother and my father, who before him in New York, and then working at ESPN, I've gotten more than my share of ample opportunity to meet and being a part of the ESPYs and the ESPY golf tournament, the Jimmy V golf tournament. So not just sports figures, but showbiz figures. At least there's some sort of tangential interaction with them. For example, I never met Joe DiMaggio, but my brother Jim did at the Bing Crosby Celebrity Golf Tournament, which is a funny story I've told many times. I'm not going to get into it right now because this is a more somber thing because we're talking about Willie Mays. And he is one of the few that we've had no interaction with at all. Nothing.
Really?
No. The only thing I can tell you is I saw him play twice. I saw him play at least once, maybe twice. I saw him play once. I could look the game up. And as a matter of fact, during the commercial break, I'm going to challenge myself to do so. It was like 1967, so I'm 10 years old. And my brothers grew up in Queens, and my father, younger man, wasn't as busy with administrative stuff. And plus, it was much easier. He would take them to the ballpark quite a bit. And frankly, different time. When my older brother got to be like 14, my mother would let him take the subway from Queens all the way up to the Bronx to go to a Yankee game with his you know, 9-year-old brother in tow. Like, she wouldn't let me do that now,
right?
You know, let alone back then. But that's what they do. Pack up a bag of sandwiches and let him go. They go watch a ball game. Amazing.
What a great day.
Oh, what a great
day. My God, what a great childhood.
My brother had so many stories about that. Things that, you know, as a kid, they would go, you get there early. I don't think they let you in as early as they used to. They used to let you in early, and he went down to the bullpen, and the old bullpens at Yankee Stadium were out in the outfield. If you've ever seen games at Yankee Stadium, the permanent seats, the reserved seats, wind around the foul poles in both right field and left field.
Okay.
So those are the ones that are nearest to the foul pole are reserved seats. Then the bleachers start after that. They go from left center field to right center field. There was a gap. It's not like this anymore. There was a gap between the reserved seats and the bleacher seats that was where the bullpen would be.
Okay.
And so you could go, when you got there early, they would go and run down to, you know, they weren't their seats, but they would run down to the reserve seats, and they would look down at the, I just love stories like this, because they're so perfect with Major League Baseball. He's maybe 10 or 11, and they would run down there and watch the guy warming up the pitcher. Did I tell you this story?
Yeah, yeah, I love the story.
And
though.
He's and the guy, you know, this Major League pitcher, and these kids are 10 or 11, and they're really zipping it. And so they yell down to him, hey, catch, catch. Catch, does that hurt? Does that hurt? That's really fast. Does that hurt? And he looks up at them and he says, kid, why don't you go F yourself? Oh, my.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah, it was a simpler time, needless to say. So, yeah, they'd go to the game and do that. Well, anyway, Willie Mays, at this, so I didn't get to go as often. Because my father, it was much more of a time commitment to go from Long Island to go see even the Mets play in Queens, which is technically on Long Island, but it's in the New York City border, and certainly go to the Bronx to see the Yankees. So my mother felt bad. She was good that way. So one day she said, well, he's not going to take you. I'm going to take you. So it was summer. We're out of school. It was a day game. She wasn't going to go at night, but it was a day game. She didn't drive, but you could take the Long Island Railroad. But again, it was much more confusing than just having a kid walk to the corner and get on the subway and go. They take anywhere in the city.
Right.
And when my brothers were young, this one we had to take the Long Island Railroad to Woodhaven Station, I think. I don't remember, but I just know it was a little bit more complicated. No, you take it to Jamaica, and then you changed. Everybody changes in Jamaica. And then you had to go to a Shea Stadium Long Island Railroad train. And this is unbelievable. This is how I know it was a different time. We didn't have tickets. She said, we'll buy tickets when we get there. So we did, you know, and we got tickets, and they were not like, she didn't buy them from a scalper, I don't think. That wouldn't be her style. We bought tickets. They literally are probably the best seats I've ever had for a Major League Baseball game.
Really?
Oh, we were maybe 8 rows behind home plate.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. And they're playing the—
How much were these things?
Yeah, 10. You think she's going to tell me, hey, Bob, I got a great deal on these. I don't know. She just bought them for me. I walked in, got my little pennant and my souvenir. And
got my little pennant.
My little hot dog. That was great. But the other great thing was, these are the things you remember. And this is tangentially related to Willie Mays. The Mets, unlike Yankee Stadium, the screen behind home plate used to be just a screen straight up. So if a guy hit a foul and it came over the screen, it would come into the stands.
Oh, wow.
The Yankee screen is like all the Major League screens now. It goes up and connects.
Yeah.
And the ball can't come in there. That's when you always see the Oregon guy playing when he fouls one in the screen.
Right.
The ball comes down. I'll never forget. I was like, oh, my God, if somebody fouls one over the screen here, we might. My dream to this day is to get a foul ball.
To get a foul ball.
A Major League game, which I still never have. And so I will never forget this. The adult me finds the 10-year-old me pathetically adorable, if that's a term. Because I'll never forget this. I'm sitting there. I've got my program in my hand. I'm not keeping score. I'm only 10. But I'm sitting there, and I've got the program. And a guy hit a foul, and it came up. And I remember I was on the aisle, and I jumped up, and I was dancing around in the aisle. But like so excited, trying to get my feet positioned for this foul ball. I always I was a quarterback with happy feet. I was bouncing around, and it came relatively close, but it didn't.
It wasn't
near me. I remember thinking, isn't it unbelievable when you're 10, the crazy stuff that goes through your head? Should I roll the program up and try and catch it at the top like in a cone? Because I'm 10. I'll never be able to catch this thing. So I was rolling the program up, dancing around, jumping around. My heart was pounding. And it didn't come that close to us.
Right. Landed, I don't know, like 4 rows away.
Yeah, 5,
yeah.
4 rows away and over some. But anyway, so I remember that. But I will find this game. I'm pretty sure it was 67. So the Mets still sucked. They hadn't gotten good yet. They weren't good till 69. They never came close to a winning season between 62 and 69. They were, you know, their first year in existence, they lost 120 games, one of the worst teams in the history of baseball. And they only got incrementally better, and not by a lot.
Right.
So at this point, they were still pretty bad. But they're playing the mighty San Francisco Giants of Willie Mays and Willie McCovey back-to-back in the batting order. And they come to the ninth inning, top of the ninth, and they are ahead 2-1. And I think the Mets catcher was Jerry Grody. I don't know. But I remember Mays fouling out to the catcher, and the catcher had her come back to the screen. So he was like – and he made a great running, sliding catch on it. And the place went crazy because we got the great Willie Mays out.
Right.
And then they struck out Willie McCovey, I'm pretty sure, to end the game. I'm going to look it up and see if I remember.
Wow.
And they won. So they won 2-1 over the Giants. Now, I guess it might be cooler to say, like when I saw Pele play, he was playing for my team. He was playing for the New York Cosmos. And right. I went to a game where the Cosmos beat the Tampa Bay Rowdies 3-1, and Pele had a goal, and Giorgio Canalia, who was one of the great goal scorers in the history of that league, had two goals. So you talk about having star power.
Oh, geez.
And my guy Shep Messing had a great game and goal. I mean, that is hitting the grand slam there.
Right.
Well, I guess it might have been better if I'd been able to say, I went to see Willie Mays, and oh, like I remember going to see Hank Aaron. We were sitting in the outfield. Remember when we went to see the Reds play the Mets and we were out by the foul pole down there, like in left field?
Yeah.
You're in fair territory. There's some
I think it was the Pirates.
Fair
but
territory.
Yeah.
No, it was the Reds, because I can tell you that's how they wound up winning and going to the playoffs.
Oh, you were at that game with Jamie.
No, let's forget about it. Whatever. I was just trying to tell you where we were sitting. When we went with a school group, and you don't get the best seats when you buy a group thing.
Right.
So we were out in the upper level. Out in the outfield, they don't have bleachers at Chase Stadium. At least they didn't then. So you're the reserve seats, but we're in the outfield. And Hank Aaron hit two home runs, one to left center and one to right center. And the Mets lost, needless to say, because they were still sucky at that point. So I can walk out and say I saw Hammered Hank at his best. Maybe it'd be cooler to say that about Willie Mays.
So you got to see like the home run balls like kind of laying near.
Oh yeah,
if, no, you, if
no,
you were
well,
sitting,
no, we were. We were up right by the foul pole in the upper
yeah, yeah, I know
but
what you're
I,
talking
I,
about.
I looked. Yeah, it was landed parallel to us. Went over the fence, and I watched it, and I was like, holy crap, that's, you know, he clubbed that when he clubbed the other. So I'm saying it might be cooler to say I saw Willie Mays, you know, hit two home runs or something. But
right.
I don't remember him doing anything spectacular in this game, other than it was cool to see him make the basket catch in center field. You know, that's how he caught the ball. He caught it. You knew that, right?
Yeah.
Basket catch, yeah. I did see him play, and I went to the 1973 World Series, and he was on that roster. I don't know that he played the game I was there. He was only a part-time player, and he was clearly a shell of himself, just like Mickey Mantle was at the end of his career. But I did. Those are the only two interactions. I never interviewed him with ESPN. I never had anything that like a function where even I just went up and said, you know, Mr. Mays, it was a pleasure to watch a player. Nothing. So my brother never had any. My father didn't. I can only tell you this, though. When I was growing up, you know, they were gone. The Giants left in the late 50s to go to San Francisco. But they had played in New York. And he had some really, you know, his best years were probably in New York. Maybe his first years in San Francisco, he was very good, too. But there was a... Zach made a great point. I said, when you grew up in New York at that time, the ongoing debate was who's the best center fielder in baseball, and they were all playing in New York. Mm-hmm. You had Mickey Mantle with the Yankees, Willie Mays with the Giants, and Duke Snyder with the Dodgers, and they were all great. And I'm serious. You could just bring that up anywhere with kids, with adults, in a bar, anywhere, and people would get into a very spirited debate about it. And he said that was sports radio before sports radio. That's actually a good analogy. But that's why there's such a love of baseball in the city. I mean, you know, you'd have that debate at shortstops, Phil Rizzuto, Pee Wee Reese, who was better, that kind of thing. But he was great. The only thing is, I'll say, and I feel bad because he's passed, and, you know, I'm not trying to be critical, but there's a book, I think it's called Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. I read it. What order it's in, is it Mickey, Willie, and the Duke? Willie, Mickey, and the Duke? I don't know, something of the Duke. But it's about the three great New York center fielders. And the thing about Willie Mays is he came from the Negro Leagues, and the Negro Leagues were very cognizant of entertaining the crowd. It was very – that's how the basket catch started.
Yeah.
They would – you know, if you ever watched the movie A League of Their Own,
yeah.
Remember Dottie, isn't she that her name, the catcher, and they said, you know, you got to spruce it up a little bit.
Yeah, she does
and
a little behind the
doing,
back.
And she starts doing splits when she's catching foul pops. That was kind of the mantra of the – of the Negro Leagues. And so when he came in, he liked that showmanship part of it. And so in showmanship games, he was really good. I should look this up. I apologize to you for not doing it ahead of time. Willie Mays, this book points that out. In the All-Star games, Willie Mays was great. Mantle was much more of a bottom line guy.
Right.
He didn't really give a spit about the All-Star games. And so his All-Star numbers are terrible. Awful. But his World Series numbers are phenomenal. He had the all-time record for a World Series home runs for a long time, 18, That was postseason, too. Now the postseason number's been broken because there's so many more rounds.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
He might still have the World Series record. I'm not sure anybody's got more World Series home runs. I could look that up.
I'm going to look that up.
He was great in the World Series. Willie Mays played in the World Series in the 50s. The Giants lost to the Yankees in 62. In the ninth inning, Willie McCovey could have won the game for them. Hit a rocket line drive that hit it right at the second baseman for the Yankees, Bobby Richardson. If it's literally a foot either way, it goes into right field, and the Giants win the World Series. But they didn't. So, Mantle was still playing very good baseball in 62. His decline started a couple years after that. So he was just not great in the World Series. That's just as simple as that. But Mantle was spectacular. But their regular season numbers were this book says makes the case that you could have made both of them as great as Willie was, and they both won MVP awards. Mantle probably, based on the numbers, could have been the American League Most Valuable Player for like 7 straight years. That's what this guy said.
Wow.
And Mays is in the same boat. But, you know, writers don't like to do that. They like to spread it around a little bit. So they didn't. They didn't give it to them that many years in a row, but they were spectacular.
All right. As of 2 years ago, so I don't think this has changed too much.
Okay.
Here are the top 10 postseason
home runs. Yeah, postseason, but that's what I
said. No, I know, but this speaks to what you're talking about. Manny Ramirez is first with 29, Jose Altuve with 23, Bernie Williams with 22, Derek Jeter with 20. Tied for fifth, Albert Pujols and George Springer with 19. Tied for seventh, Mickey Mantle and Reggie Jackson with 18.
Okay.
So he's in the top 10 all time, playing less games probably.
All right, here's the list.
Considerably less games.
The most career World Series home runs. Now, this is just World Series home runs, okay?
Okay. You know, I have
Mickey Mantle with 18.
I have that too, yeah.
Babe Ruth with 15. Yogi Berra with 12. Duke Snyder with 11. Reggie Jackson with 10, Lou Gehrig with 10, Frank Robinson 9, Bill Scourin, also known as Moose, with 8, Joe DiMaggio with 8, George Springer with 7, Chase Utley with 7. How about that?
Yeah.
Gil McDougall with 7, Hank Bauer with 7, and on down the line, Roger Maris with 6, Willie Mays, not all, Elston Howard with 5, Johnny Bench with 5, Billy Martin with 5. That's an unusual one. He was not a power hitter at all. But Willie Mays, not on that list, A, didn't play in all that many home runs, and like I said, that many World Series, and also not really particularly good in the World Series.
For every single one of Mickey Mantle's 18 postseason home runs came in the World Series.
Well, because there was no other rounds of playoffs, Nick. It was
impossible. I thought they played one championship.
That's all they had. The American League pennant winner played the National League pennant winner.
I thought they played a championship series.
No,
oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought there was one round there.
No, that's why. That's like, you know.
So wow. So he did that in one round.
That's all. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No. I knew it was impressive because I knew they didn't play the divisional series, but I didn't know they didn't even play a championship series back then.
No,
wow. Right. That's incredible.
So Willie Mays in the postseason, for example, he played in 6 postseason series. Now they include the Negro League plays. That's what they put in the standings. And I'm not trying to be snobby, but let's compare apples to apples. Major League comparison. He played in 4 World Series. He hung around long enough to play in 2 National League Championship Series. He played against the Pirates when he was 40, and he played with the New York Mets. They won against the Reds in 73, and then he played in the World Series in 73. He had 7 plate appearances with 2 hits. So his overall World Series batting average, his overall Major League postseason average was .248. In World Series play, it was .230. 5 World Series, he batted .230 with no home runs. No home runs. 21 games, no home runs, and just 6 RBIs.
And this was what year?
This is his career. 5 World Series, 21 World Series games, no home runs, and a .230 batting average.
Jeez.
Yeah, I'm saying. So that's but I'll tell you, let's go take a look at his All-Star statistics. And again, I hope it doesn't sound like I'm being, petty here, because I was in awe of Willie Mays, but I mean, he was gone from New York, but by the time I was conscious of what was going on, they left
right
when I was 1. And the Giants games was not like it is now. They weren't on TV very much.
Right. So
I just knew
you'd
my
heard
reputation,
of him. Yeah, right.
I didn't
right.
see him very much. But I, you know, it was always fun to watch him because he was such a colorful player. Let me see if I can find his All-Star game totals here. Hall of
Let's
Fame
see here. Willie Mays.
I don't think it shows All-Star game stats, unfortunately. Show Hall of Fame statistics. Well, I'm sorry that they don't have All-Star games.
Yeah, it just has his career stats.
All right, but now contrast what I
ooh,
just
ooh,
read.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Baseball Almanac. Willie Mays All-Star stats.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you.
Let's see here. He played in, wow, he played in a lot of All-Star games.
Oh, my God.
One, two, three, four.
Where do you see these numbers?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 20 appearances.
Okay.
75 at-bats, 20 runs, 23 hits.
Yeah.
Two doubles, three triples, and three home runs.
What did he bat? Was batting average?
It doesn't say. I have to do math. Sorry. Right, 23 for 75.
That's still unbelievable.
Yeah. So he's batting like,
he
I mean, that's basically
three,
yeah,
over
300. Okay. Yeah.
Now Mantle, contrast. Here's his. He had played in 12 World Series, and Mickey Mantle hit had 40 RBIs, 18 home runs, six doubles, two triples. He scored 42 runs, and he batted. Not off the charts, 257, but he had a couple of, like, a couple of those were really brought down by, like, they got swept by the Dodgers in 63, Koufax and Drysdale, he only batted 133, but he had some unbelievable World Series, some fantastic World Series. He batted 400 against the Pirates in 1960. Even the last World Series when he played in 64, when they played the Cardinals, he batted 333. His postseason numbers were off the charts. He had 40 RBIs, as I said, 18 home runs, walked 43 times, had an OPS of .908, which is very strong, and some World Series he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 World Series where the OPS was over 1,000, 1 point something, which is extraordinary. So, yeah. But again, not trying to knock it. It's just that it made for a fascinating – Duke Snyder was really good in the postseason, too.
Yeah, he had 11 home runs.
Yeah, he was on that list. He
and those would all be in the World Series,
that's,
right?
Yeah. That's how time to get playback.
Yeah. So. Willie Mays also had six stolen bases, got caught stealing once.
Well, that's,
the
they both
game.
Could run. Willie could really run. And Mantle, they said at the time, might have been the fastest player in the game, but then his
Mantle,
knee,
really?
Oh, my God. When he first came up, he could fly. They clocked him from home to first. And remember, he could bat switch hitter, so he would go from – when he was batting against a right-hand pitcher, he was going from the left-hand batter's box. So he got to first base even faster than Mays, because Mays is a right-hand
Yeah, right.
Batter.
That makes sense.
Had to take a couple of extra steps. So they could both fly. And they were both really – Mantle was a really good fielder, too, but Mays was a spectacular fielder. And Mays has the distinction of being in my collection of about 250 bobbleheads, in my humble opinion –
The best
bobblehead of all. It is. You can go look it up on eBay. It's him in the 1954 World Series. Is that what it is? Against Cleveland in the Polo Grounds. I think it's Vic Wirtz. I think it was. I get them confused all the time. Vic Wirtz and Vic Power. I think
well, you're
Vic
looking
Wirtz.
That up. Willie Mays, I do have it here. His batting average in the All-Star game, .307.
Yeah, right.
OBP, .366, and a slugging percentage of .533.
Yeah, I mean, he was unbelievable in All-Star game. And keep in mind, those are against the best pitchers in the game.
Yeah, right.
But Mantle is not that. He's probably, hate to say it, probably out partying the night before. He really didn't care about the All-Star game, not that much. Willie Mays' catch was against Vic Wirtz, and it was absolutely astounding if you've never seen it. It was in the 1954 World Series. Cleveland had just set the record for most wins in a season, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And the Giants swept them, amazingly. And that was one of the plays that did it, because that was an incredible, incredible play. The National League champion New York Giants against the American League champion Cleveland Indians. The Giants swept in four games, won their first championship since 1933. The Indians had been heavily favored coming in. They'd won 111 games in a 154-game season, which was the record that lasted all the way until 1998. When the Yankees won 114. So that was an incredible season. The Polo Grounds is one of the most oddly shaped baseball stadiums in the history of the game. It was
about a
half a wedge to the foul lines in left and right field. And then, as you said, it was about a $12 cab ride to center field. It was 480 feet. The clubhouses were actually in center field. The players had to go upstairs out there because it was so far away. You walked all the way out to center field, went up the steps, and that's where the clubhouses were. It was weird. And this ball was hit almost to the center field fence, which means it was almost 480 feet away. There's a picture of it. And he catches it with his back directly to home plate. It's an unbelievable catch.
It is wild.
One of the most spectacular catches in the history of baseball. And certainly in that setting was amazing. Game one of the series. That's when it set the tone for the Giants. Vic Wertz near the outfield wall with his back to the infield. But that's the beauty of the game. Vic Wertz hit that ball maybe 479 feet or so. The Giants won because the utility player Dusty Rhodes had a pinch hit walk-off home run in game one that went about 259 feet over the right field fence.
Little chip shot.
He hit a flop wedge. That was the beauty of the game. Unbelievable. Fantastic. Willie Mays, great player.
You want to hear about the sports science? They did a sports science on the catch.
Oh, I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see what this says. This could be good.
Here's an ESPN sports science breakdown of the iconic over-the-shoulder catch made by Willie Mays in Game 1 of the 1954 World Series. Tied 2-2 in the top of the eighth inning, Cleveland's Vic Wertz launches a ball that, based on launch angle, flight time, and atmospheric conditions, came off his bat at an estimated 106.8 miles per hour. Mays, playing in shallow center, gets a great jump on the ball and runs more than 90 feet to track it down. Running at over 14 miles per hour, Mays instinctively relies on a process called optical acceleration cancellation. As his eyes track the ball, its acceleration and deceleration in his field of vision give him clues on adjustments to his running speed. This complex visual process is how Mays is able to track the ball to its landing area.
Willie Mays just brought this ball to his feet.
And by overlaying prints of the Polo Grounds with satellite imaging, we discovered that spot measured 421 feet from home plate, 29 feet shorter than originally reported.
Ah.
With the ball moving at roughly 50 miles per hour,
oh, Lord.
Mays extends his arms just a tenth of a second before it hits his glove. All told, if Mays extended his arms just 3/100ths of a second later, less than half the time it takes for a match to ignite, he would have missed the ball by over 2 feet.
Wow.
But Mays times his reach perfectly and secures one of the greatest catches in MLB history.
They got to bring that
back. The only thing I would take issue with is you can see pictures of where he catches it. That fence, I think, was listed at 480 feet from home plate.
Yeah, is it one of those things where, like, deceptively based on the angle,
picture doesn't do justice, or I hate to say it, I don't think anybody ever really questioned these ballparks with their distances. I mean, I remember Yankee Stadium changed the distance on their outfield fence twice when I was growing up. It used to be 463 feet to dead center field. Then it was 461 feet, and I don't think they changed anything. So, I don't know, maybe they remeasured it. So I don't know. But, boy, I will say this, though. Even if it was only, and I put in air quotes, only, about 420 to 430 feet away, he was playing shallow because if a case was a single, he had a very strong arm. He was going to try and throw the guy out at home. There was a guy on second, I'm almost sure.
Yeah.
And so that would have been the go-ahead run. The game was tied. So he was playing shallow, and the ball was hit. And he played a relatively shallow center field anyway. The ball was hit 420 feet. I mean, that's a lot of ground to cover.
He covered 90 feet.
All the stats that are amazing is the one that in the time – it was half the time it takes for a match to ignite. If he had reached with that margin of error, he would have missed the ball completely.
Yeah.
Not that they said, well, when it bounced off his glove, he would have missed the ball completely. That's astounding. But that's what great fielders do, the ability to gauge whatever that term you use, the scientific term, where you're processing, you're looking at it, you're gauging the speed of the ball, the arc of the ball, and projecting about where it's going to come down, and then just taking off and going to get it. Amazing stuff. So, yeah. Rest in peace, Billy Mill. Well, they're taking away all my – it's rough to be my demographic. They're all going – and now I'm at the point where I'm worried about my own temporaries going. But Jerry West and Willis Reed and Willie Mays and –
your childhood.
It's, yeah, these guys were legends. Legends. And I don't know, will you guys react that way? Will there be athletes that'll make you react that way?
Oh, it's already happening. Like, I still remember these guys. And occasionally, sadly, you know, guys go too early. But no, it's starting
because,
to.
Because, I mean, there were not that many teams, remember. You got to remember, when I was a kid, there were 20 Major League Baseball teams. They're actually technically 16, but I was too young to remember that era. There were 20 Major League Baseball teams. The NBA had 13 teams, I think. The National Hockey League actually had 6 and then made an enormous expansion to 14. So you basically knew all the players. And when they were the best players on these teams, they were very impactful. So I just don't know if it has the same impact. But I
would say my childhood was this golden age of accessibility before what's the word I'm looking for here? Before bombardment. In the sense that you just mentioned it. You'd heard of Willie Mays. You'd read about Willie Mays. You didn't get to see him all the time.
Very rarely.
When I grew up as a kid, the internet was obviously around, but I had SportsCenter. So I could watch Baseball Tonight and see all these guys every single night.
Right.
But the other thing is, I would see them in all of their, you know, I'd see the Derek Jeter Gatorade ads and everything like that. But I did all that before getting bombarded by the internet. When literally they talk about, you know, and this was back like when I was in college. I think it was saying like every day you interact with like 5,000 ads a day or something like that in some sort of way, shape, or form. Now it has to be way more than that. For every time you go, you fall down a dopamine wormhole, or you're watching shorts on YouTube, TikTok,
just look out the window
IG.
And you see all those signs and trademarks.
I'm saying that now I see those athletes even more, but they're mixed in with thousands of other ads and thousands of other content. When I was growing up, before, and this is before Tanner, you know, like before, like, you know, 10 years before Tanner, I had the golden age of access that I could see these guys as much as I wanted. Before the floodgates opened, and I was seeing everything all the time, is what I'm saying. So I think my generation, the millennials, I think have that.
You will have that connection,
that golden era, and then after that, I think it'll get watered down a little bit more.
U.S. was going at a pretty good clip. They had scored 33 runs in 3 overs, which was a run average per over of 10. And that would have been enough. 10 runs per over 20 overs, will get you 200 runs. They would be right up with South Africa. South Africa got 2 wickets in a row. That's 2 outs for Americans who don't know cricket. And so now the U.S. has 57 runs on 6.6, well, that'll be 7 overs. 6.6 is 7. So they got 57 runs in 7 overs. You get 20 overs. They have to score 138 runs with 78 balls. That's a run per over rate of 10.6. That's very high. So South Africa has righted the ship a bit in their fielding. U.S. is going to have a difficult time. But let's go see if our guy from Queens batted already. If they got him out, that's going to be sad.
We are way late for a break, by the way. I had Leaves lined up to join us at 12:30. He's just been sitting out there.
Well, am I supposed to know
no,
that?
No,
don't tell me that.
That's
I don't
not,
know that.
That's not your fault. This
well,
is,
you always
this
ask is, for a break, though. You're like the boy who cried wolf, so I didn't.
No, that's my bad. This one's totally on me.
And the commercials stop coming
here. Oh, my Lord. Our guy Aaron Jones, the skipper. The guy from Queens.
Uh-oh.
The guy who had 100.
Oh, no.
5 balls, no runs.
Oh, God.
Caught. Out.
It's crazy that he can also be an NFL running back.
Not funny.
I thought it was pretty funny.
U.S. No runs from Jones.
You know, we for a split second, Tanner brought up a very good point about maybe we should take this UK baseball game. today, and maybe we should be on the air on 93.9.
I thought our show was going to be canceled. Because I was like, oh.
But it's not looking good for the Bad Cats.
Oh, what are they doing?
Oh, it's 9-2, Florida.
I assume they have the two, or you wouldn't have said that.
UK has the two. UK
and
has
it was 7-1 before.
Yeah, they gave up. They gave fourth inning. They gave up a seven spot, including a grand slam in the first inning.
How is Florida the home team though?
That's they do it. Based I don't get on, that. On the, in the how the brackets play. If you look, it's got nothing to do with anything else. All right. Well, I'm sorry, Leaves. I apologize to you. But let's go to break, and then we'll continue the radio. He probably has to leave now.
No, he's got 30 minutes.
All right. Well, let's stay with us for a little bit. ESPN 680, 105.7.